It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. As Golf Digest ranks Wisconsin number one in the nation for public golf courses, we discuss the significance of that distinction and how courses are doing here. Call in with a question. You can share your comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sue Shapcott is founder and director of Change Golf Instruction in Madison and a former professional tour player. Sue, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Okay, so Golf Digest listing Wisconsin as the top state in the nation for public courses. What makes our state a quality state for public play?
It's quite amazing, isn't it, really? Wisconsin, with our weather, who'd have thought that, you know, we would be one of the top-ranked, or the top-ranked state? And, you know, I think it's really a combination of a few things. And, you know, we have a very golf-enthusiastic population here in Wisconsin. We have developers who see the opportunity of the land that we have here. So we've got stunning golf courses like, you know, Whistling Straits. And then we have, you know, developers who, you know, are building amazing golf courses like Michael Kaiser and Sand Valley. And my guess is that, you know, once a state starts getting a few courses that become destination and have tour events at them and majors at them, then, you know, it really just kind of feeds and it becomes, you know, a cycle where more developers build and more golfers come. So, I mean, it's a great situation for Wisconsin.
Okay, so you mentioned Whistling Straits in Sheboygan. What are your favorite public courses to play in the state?
There's so many. I still have a sweet spot for Sand Valley, which is the golf course that, you know, is being developed in Rome, Wisconsin. And they've now got four golf courses out there. And the thing that I love about it is that they are inspired by English Heathside courses, which means that, you know, they remind me of home. So, mm-hmm. You know, that is something that I love about the golf courses in, you know, up in Sand Valley.
What makes that play distinctly different than perhaps other courses that don't really follow that heritage?
It's a good question. So what I think that Sand Valley does more than some golf courses is that not only is the golf course design very similar to UK golf courses, but the traditions that they have there are very similar to. So there's caddies, there's, you know, the culture is very kind of welcoming and inclusive. And so, you know, it's just a really friendly place to go. So there's kind of no airs or graces about it.
You know, golf can be, you know, quite an expensive hobby. It doesn't always have to be. Do you have any tips to play golf more on the cheap?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that is the downside of our golf courses being so highly ranked, is that, you know, these golf courses that we're talking about, they are not inexpensive to play. So, you know, the thing to do is look out for deals, look out for last minute opportunities. You know, just calling the golf courses as a single player sometimes gets you on to these great golf courses. In Wisconsin, there are websites that help you find discounted green fees. So all of those things are worth checking out.
We have Sue Shapcott with us, founder and director of the Madison-based Change Golf Instruction, as we talk about Wisconsin's ranking in the golf world. You can join in with questions and comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sue, this Golf Digest ranking also puts Wisconsin, as you mentioned, in the spotlight, puts our courses here in the spotlight. What other states are really great destinations for Wisconsin golfers? What would you recommend?
Michigan always gets ranked really high, which, you know, is also interesting considering the weather there. And so, you know, if you want something local, then Michigan is a great place. I have many students who go to Michigan for a weekend or a week and just play golf courses there. So that's another great place in a state that's full of fantastic public golf courses. If you want to go further afield, then I really like the Pacific Northwest. The golf courses there, very rugged, very kind of Scottish and Irish-like. So, the likes of Bandon Dunes, is really, I think, a bucket list trip. But if you want something closer to home, then Michigan is really good.
What are courses doing to improve the player experience and not only retain golfers, but attract new golfers into the sport?
Yeah, so since the pandemic, then golf has really had a golf boom. Golf was a very safe place for people to congregate during the pandemic, and that boom has continued. So we've got a really big influx of new golfers. We've also got, I think in 2023, it was the first time ever that more people played golf off course than on course. So meaning in golf simulators, meaning just on driving ranges with technology. And so I think there was over 30 million people that played off course golf last year compared to just under 30 million that played on course. Now we've got a great opportunity to bring those off course golfers onto traditional courses, but golf doesn't always make that easy. We still have problems in making people feel that they belong in golf courses. So, we can do a lot still to improve the culture, make people who aren't used to being in a golf environment feel a little bit more welcome. But it's a great opportunity for us to bring more people into the game and make the game more inclusive than it has been in the past.
Sue, that's really curious about people playing golf at driving ranges and virtual bars and things like that off traditional golf courses. What do you think is behind that trend?
I think it's a couple of things. I think that it's cheaper, number one. I mean, for example, in many of these simulated golf environments, you could play in Hawaii one day, then you could play at Whistling Straits the next day, you could play at St. Andrews the next day. So these simulators are kind of loaded with software where you can play all around the world on the top golf courses all around the world. Just a fraction of the cost of actually playing them physically. So, you have that aspect to it. It's also a lot more time efficient. So you can play 18 holes of golf in a simulator probably in 2 hours instead of 4 or 5 hours, which it takes on a typical golf course. So I just think it's more accessible for people in terms of cost and time. And if that's a good entry point for people to come into the game, then I think that's great.
Have you tried
Yeah, I love them. Yeah.
them?
I play there for the same reasons that other people do. It's a lot faster and it's less expensive. I don't have to travel anywhere, so it's really fun. It's a good way of spending time with friends too.
Speaking of technology, are there any good golfing apps or any types of technology that are helping people improve their game?
Oh, there are so many that have come on the market in the last few years. So, let's say that you did go and play at Whistling Straits or Sand Valley, then, before you go, you can use technology to kind of map out and plan how you want to play the course. There's golf wearables that get to know your game, your clubs, how far you hit different clubs. And so then when you do go and play at these high-end public golf courses, then your app can be your caddy. It knows your game and it can tell you what club to hit where, so it can give you strategy. So you can really make the most of the experience. So there's
Wow.
technology for that. There's technology even if you go to a simulator to practice. And I've been doing a lot of teaching inside this year over at Blind Shot Golf on the Near East Side, and they have a technology called TrackMan. And TrackMan is the gold standard for ball flight analysis and launch monitors. And so it gives me all of the data points that I need to know about a golfer and their swing. So it could be their club head speed, the direction that they're swinging in, the club face angle when they hit the ball, the angle that the club swings down at the ball on. And so with students, I can identify one aspect of their golf swing, and we can measure it using TrackMan. And then when they go away and practice, then they can just focus on that number. And so they can quantifiably see how their swing is changing. So,
Wow.
teaching has evolved a lot because of technology.
Wow, so data rich, and then machine learning in your golf game as well. So, last year the US Golf Association announces it would be changing the makeup of golf balls to reduce how far they travel when you hit them. What are the ramifications of that decision?
Oh, it's been a very laborious discussion in terms of what the governing bodies are going to do to make golf courses viable in the future. So what I mean by that is that at the elite end of golf, particularly in the men's game, then golfers are hitting the ball a lot further. Technology has gotten better, technique has gotten better, golfers are stronger. And so what has been happening is that professional players on tour have basically been outpowering traditional golf courses. And so the game has become less exciting because golfers can just hit it so far that there's, what's lost has been elements of skill. And so the governing bodies have been trying to figure out ways to limit how far players hit the ball to make the game a bit more interesting again. So what they have decided to do is limit the flight of the ball. There was a lot of discussion for a while about having some kind of bifurcation where you would have one ball for elite players, professional players, and another ball for amateur players. They did not decide to do that. They just decided to limit the ball across the board. In my opinion, based on my own game and people who I teach, the last thing I need and they need is a golf ball that doesn't go as far. So I think that it hurts recreational golfers, and I'm not sure how much it limits the elite golfers. So we'll see how it plays out. I think the new rule comes into effect in 2025. But I think that at my end of the game, then players actually need balls, and technology can help them hit the ball further to make the game a little bit easier rather than technology that limits the ball. So I'm not necessarily a fan of this solution, but we'll see how it goes.
Sue Shapcott with us, former pro tour player, leads Change Golf Instruction in Madison as we discuss Wisconsin as a golf destination. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin golf courses are negotiating this roller coaster of weather conditions and unseasonably warm weather. And so we check in on the sport and how public courses are doing. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Sue Shapcott is here, a former pro tour player and leads Change Golf Instruction in Madison. Sue, in terms of this weather, and I'm sure we're interfering with your time on the course on such a warm day, what effect does winter golfing have on course maintenance and on the greens?
Yes. I mean, this weather is just amazing. So the driving ranges aren't open yet. So don't worry, you're not stopping me from getting out to work. I mean, it's really caught all of us by surprise. A lot of the courses don't have their golf carts delivered yet, which is why the driving ranges tend not to be open and we don't have our equipment to pick up balls. And even if we did have them, then it's a question of whether you would want golf carts out. The golf courses are still going to be really wet. There's not going to be too much growth in the grass yet. And so, the golf course is usually rested a lot more than they will be this year. So, it's going to be interesting to see how they hold up with, if they get a little play early in the season.
Well, the publication Wisconsin Golf is keeping tabs on courses around the state and reporting that these temps have led more than two dozen courses to open and remain open as conditions are allowing. How typical is it for courses to open and close in winter months?
During the fall, I've been here in Madison for 10 years. During the fall, then we often have the courses close, and then we get a warm spell, and then we open back up again. And so we just kind of squeeze some more rounds out of the season that end. This has been my first year where we've been ready to go before April. So it's new territory for me. And so it's In my experience, it's very unusual. I'm not ready to get going. My team of instructors isn't ready to get going. The golf courses aren't necessarily ready to get going. We don't usually staff up this early in the summer. So, if this trend continues, then it's really going to shake up how we operate as golf courses and operators here in Madison.
How do you think climate change is affecting our state's golf courses?
Oh, that's a big question. I'm not sure I'm really qualified to answer that with any intelligence, but from a business perspective, then our season could get extended, which if the goal is to increase the bottom line and get more revenue, then that's good for golf. If we're thinking about the bigger and deeper implications of the golf courses being open for longer, then it's not so good. It's quite alarming.
Sue Shapcott with us, founder and director of Madison-based Change Golf Instruction, as we talk about the game and we talk about courses and this weather. You can join in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Sue, the National Golf Foundation is reporting that the number of Black, Asian, and Hispanic golfers is up by over 40% since 2018, and the number of women players rose by 23% over that same period. What do you think is drawing more historically underrepresented people to the sport?
Of public golf courses, then I think that having public access golf courses is really good for making our sport more inclusive. Now, by comparison, where I came from in the UK, then even though golf is more affordable, then the way that the system is set up there is it's very much club-based. And so while the US has seen this big growth in diversity in who plays golf, it hasn't been reflected in the UK. And so, I'm left thinking that the way that golf is structured in the US, having more public golf courses and less kind of club structure is really helping us diversify golf. And if we go back to the off-course golf, the simulator golf, then, in terms of women golfers of color, then we are seeing a lot more growth in those areas with off-course golf. And so I think that that could be an entry point for non-traditional golfers, underrepresented golfers, and they get the bug in, a more relaxed environment, and then, that feeds through into more traditional golf. So I think it's a combination of things, but it's all really exciting to see.
It makes me wonder what the future holds for the country club, a private model for golf.
It is going to be interesting. My guess is that there's always going to be a need and a niche for country club golf. Again, thinking about why Wisconsin does so well with public golf courses, my perception is that Midwesterners aren't necessarily as keen on their country club golf as, maybe East Coast elite places are. But I think that public golf is going to continue to grow, but I think there probably will always be a need for and a market for private country clubs.
Well, so just in our last moments together, people might be stepping foot back on the golf course in these temps. Is there some good exercises for golfers as they get ready to play?
Golfers are notoriously bad at doing any kind of warm up before they play. And so really anything to get moving. So arm circles, leg swings, just a bit of twisting. You just want to get blood moving through your body before you start swinging. So no static stretches. So, don't hold a stretch for kind of 30 seconds. Just get your body moving. So get, dance, quick walking, just move your arms around. Anything to get your blood moving would be good.
Sue, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's nice to chat to you.
Yes, Sue Shapcott is founder and director of Change Golf Instruction and a former professional tour player. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.